so I really went through my early to mid 20s. Again, very tumultuous earthly story that I was in. And in my early years, I was hooked into the victim frequency.
Okay.
I was very hooked into everything was happening to me. You know, I didn't really step out of victim probably till my later 30s. Like, it took me a while to change that internal understanding.
I would love to add, not to interrupt you, but I would love to add that's so important, because what I'm hearing from you is that you had a defining moment. You had a defining moment of something is bigger than what we're seeing in this 3D world. Mm-hmm. But yet it's not that as soon as you have a defining moment, all of a sudden everything shifts and now you're in meditation and now you're doing. So I love what you said. And I think it's a valid message to those who are listening, is there are times where you still go in and out of that victim and that fear. And then, you know, many a times, again, there's like, there could be some, you know, for some people, addiction or ways to hide or things to stay busy, keep it loud. We don't want to see the redhead at the end of the bed, right? That doesn't make sense to the narrative that we're used to. And so I really want to honor that. And I do resonate with that. And I'm sure I would be surprised if people didn't, is that there will be a defining moment for us, but it doesn't mean that we're there. Then everything is just like, yay, all the angels are like ready to sing the song with us and find our song. We found a song and we're lowering the volume. So I really want to honor that, because I really want people to hold on to that. I want them to see how you unpack that.
I think it's really important to highlight that, because really this, you know, I feel like, all of our accessibility with social media and all of this, it's wonderful on one hand, but the other hand is like, we are curating what is being shared. And so there is a little bit of a misconception that it's like, once you get on the path, it's ease and grace and da, 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 da. But really it's two step forward, one step back, two step forward, five steps back, two step forward, three steps back, you know, or to use other language, it's expansion, contraction. And we can only process and access what we have the capacity to receive and understand. Mm. And our capacity is not just, you know, being an open channel or an empath or sensitive. The capacity is also our nervous system. Mm-hmm. The capacity is also our mental body.
Wow.
Right? So there's so many, you know, it is attractive to go into the ayahuasca ceremonies or the psychedelic breathwork world, or to just want to talk to the spirits and the realms. But actually, we have to do this earthly work first. Mm-hmm. You have to look at your relationship with yourself, your relationship with your parents, your relationship with money. Are you grounded and in your body? Are you constantly falling and having accidents because you're just so out of it, because you want to be up there in la la land because it feels good? And that was me. I was an ungrounded individual because it was painful to be embodied.
Right.
You know, and it takes courage to actually do that work, to be in the mud of our family story, to be in the mud of the inner child,
right,
in that space. But the more you sit with it and you clear it and neutralize it, mm-hmm, the clearer our channel becomes. And if you're someone who's stepping into service, the better you become at serving your medicine, because you're really able to walk from a place of neutrality. You're not projecting your crap on other people, right, and you're able to be in compassion for all people, right? For all. Right. Well, there's two pieces here. So I would say that work on self, that excavation of honoring and clearing the earthly story, that's part of the path and the journey. Whether you're someone who who is serving, whether you're a yoga teacher or a breathwork teacher or an osteopath or massage therapist, you have to do that work. Whether you're a mom, an aunt, a father, a son, we all have a responsibility to do that work.
Right.
Not everybody is doing it or has the capacity to do it right now. But when you do, we do need to step into that.
Right.
That to me is different than integration.
Perfect.
So integration, whether it is the big retreat or the plant medicine ceremony, or it's a sound ceremony, and or it's a breath work with me, you know, integration is, and as you've heard me say before, like the ceremony begins after the ceremony. The ceremony begins when you get in the car and you get home and there's dirty dishes in the sink and the dog hasn't gone out for its walk yet, and right?
Yeah.
So integration is that space post the grand expansion where we are braiding the filaments of that sacred experience or that connection with consciousness or that connection with our highest self. And we are braiding it into the everyday. Mm-hmm. We are bringing it in to be seen, to be witnessed. And we're not enforcing, we're not trying to push anything, but we're giving ourselves space to braid it and weave it in. And there's no timeline on integration. And that's truth too, right? Mm-hmm. Some people are like, oh, well, you know, I've done 52 ayahuasca ceremonies. I'm like, why? What's wrong with you? You know, like, unless you're in a deep dieta or you're doing some very deep work for something,
mm-hmm.
I always am a little wary of people who are just cycling around and doing that recreational circuit, because you could be in integration for the rest of your life after one ceremony. You could be into integration for 5 years after one ceremony. So it's like, really pay attention and to the presence of that now moment, these experiences, and weave them into your daily life. That is not easy to do. It's hard to find the sacred when you're trying to scrub the bits of the egg from the tin. You know, I like to make egg bites in my muffin tin, and I'm like, no way to get the egg schmush off of, you know, it's like, how can that be sacred? You know, like, where in your life can you weave more in? Oh my God, no. No. Perfect. What is perfection? You're perfectly imperfect. I really believe in lead by example. Mm-hmm. You know, we all know the yoga teacher who doesn't do yoga anymore. We all know the breathwork practitioner who doesn't breathe for themselves. I've been trying to be more mindful and actually do time lapses of me breathing so that people see me and like, she does breathe, you know? The other piece is there's a reason why I go into deep, like my dieta with tobacco, or I'm going into prayer, like with my teacher in Peru. Like, for me, it's important to keep going further so that I can come back and do more to support those who want to walk with me. Yeah. You know, we have to, and then also like making sure I'm still going out and having fun with my family and hanging out with my husband and playing, because you can't forget play. Like, that's the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
We may be on this path, but that doesn't mean you have to be holier than thou, because that's not it either.
Yeah, I do get to know people in a very deep way, and they end up sharing so much more than they ever dreamed that they would.
Yeah.
So I had a client, I've got a wonderful, wonderful woman in Cape Town, South Africa, who's been with me for a few months now, And it's like peeling the onion, you know, you just get to know them so much. Mm-hmm. And I asked her a question and she gave me a pat answer. And I just felt there was more. So I pulled another card and she just, it was, I think it was judgment that I said, what is not fair? What have you become aware of? And she just went down this whole rabbit hole that opened up this huge can of worms that I never would have known about. And I said, you know, you never would have told me all that, would you? We wouldn't be exploring that, would you, without that card? She goes, no. So it works. It works really, really well. And with the coaching, because it's tapping the subconscious mind, people start to change without realizing it. There's no homework to do, but the subconscious mind does the work. So now when I've thrown in the tarot as well, I think it works even more effectively.
Yeah.
Life. So I was principal at a very busy high school, and I had undertaken a massive project at the school. So, I mean, I just had signed up for big stuff and I was stressed and I had, I was getting chest pains. I was just, it was the end of the year. I was just so stressed out. And I made up my mind because I had a month off in the summer or a month and a half. And I made up my mind that I would find a solution to this stress. So I went to my doctor. He goes, Jan, I should be so lucky to have your heart. So, you know, it was something else. So I was just scrolling, you know, going along the internet, and this thing came up, Hollow Sync with Bill Harris, the Center Point program. This is in the days when they shipped out the CDs to you. Okay? I signed up for the full program. It was a lot of money, but I just really, I was just told to do this. And it was a program that you'd sit there and all you'd hear is crystal bells and falling rain. And you would go into the very, very deepest state possible over that half hour. And then you'd spend the remaining half hour sitting there in like totally an altered state. So it was an hour a day. And I got up at 5 a.m. to do it because I had to, because I was at the school very early in the morning. Mm-hmm. And within 2 weeks of my doing that, I already shifted because I found it 2 weeks before I had to go back to the school. And when I went back, the first thing that my assistant said is, Jan, you must have had a very relaxing summer. I can't believe how chill you are. So I thought, wow. And then my kids noticed. They definitely saw a difference. We evolve, and as we become kind of higher beings, we impact everyone around us. It's like Mother Teresa when she was asked, what can I do to save the world? And she just said, go home and love your family. Okay. It's so simple. I think we underestimate the power of the smallest things, the power of how we live. And living in love and optimism and knowing things are always working out and being more chill impacts everybody around us and bigger ripple than we know.
Absolutely. And so have you ever found any surprises with your clients where you're sharing something with them where they maybe couldn't see that as being realistic and then came back and said, oh my gosh, bang on.
All the time. But it happens differently from what you're describing. So when I'm doing a reading, and I've been doing more in person, which is really tremendous fun, mm-hmm. Just sitting there with the cards, and let's say it's a 15 card spread, everybody wants more clarity. They want a better understanding of what's going on. They want clear sense of direction. They want to know what's coming up. And so if that's not coming up with the particular card, but we feel that we're, you know, we need more, then I just continue to draw cards. Or if it's in person, the client does. Now, when this happens, the clarity is really startling. Okay. So I'll pull one card, maybe two. And then the client is just like, oh, you know, now I see. So it's all about getting the clarity on whatever we are dealing with. And that's my objective with every reading is that, okay, you know, maybe that, yeah, that sounds about right. But, you know, they're not like really excited. So I want more. I always want more. I want it like the nail, get the hammer and the nail, just get it. And it just invariably happens. So that I think is my greatest satisfaction. That really thrills me when I just see people that maybe come in, whether it's on Zoom or in person, and they're a bit flat, you know, like they just need a lift. They're not happy with certain elements of their life. They're feeling a little bit beaten down. And the cards do that because the clarity comes through and it's so clear and they know what to do and they're inspired to do it by the end.
Yeah.
For the sake of the audience who are listening, maybe someone's just kind of itching to grow and itching to really break the mold in their own life. Were you afraid when you started? Not just from the, what are people going to think of me, but can I actually do this? And can you share if you had insecurity and how you said, you know, like Louise Hay, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. Can you share, you know, what helped you or did you feel afraid and you just kept on doing it? Because I feel like maybe practice and progression really helps to ease into more confidence when you're changing lanes like this.
I wasn't afraid. I was fearful about putting the website out. That's the only thing. But about actually doing it, because as soon as I start, something takes over.
Right.
As soon as I start, I feel the channeling. And I'm going with my intuition and I surrender to the cards. And I surrender to the deeper messages of the cards. And, you know, the cards, they have so many different meanings depending on placement, depending on, you know, what you're picking up, the energy you're picking up from the client. So I think, you know, we have to live in a different part of ourselves when we're doing this kind of work. It's not logical, mathematical, right?
Absolutely. And I love that you use the word surrender. I think that's such an important role for us to bring into our life is that role of just surrendering. And I think there's so much magic to be found in surrender. Wow. And I still, even when I think about surrender, I still think about this pink flower in the cement, like just surrender to I'm going to find the light and it did it ever. And so I think it's a beautiful thing. But is there something, if you were to be talking to someone in the audience right now, that's just like, what do I do? Like, do you have, you know, wisdom or any type of just action or insight for someone who is really afraid to make that step to go from that logistical, you know, that logic brain into the whimsical magic brain, whatever that looks like? Doesn't have to be going from being a principal and superintendent in education to tarot reading, but whatever that looks like, there are people out there, and I know that are just afraid to make that step. Do you have any word of wisdom, or do you want to pull a tarot deck card, or you know what that can help them that are sitting right here, right now, and they need to make that move? And it's really important to create impact globally because of their soul.
Right. Well, you know, we tend to be fearful beings. I mean, we're always thinking about the worst. Well, think about what's the worst that could happen. And it's not going to be as bad as you think. And then if there are like heavy boulders that you have to move in order to get this done, just make yourself a little chart, you know, on a piece of paper, like put a line down the middle of the page and a line across the top and put what I will do and what the universe will do. Okay. And then think about your objective and write down what needs to be done for me to achieve this and what's relatively easy for me to do, and write all those things down. And then the things that are causing you fear that you just can't get past, the things that are blocking you, write those under what the universe will do. And then just feel your shoulders come down because you know the universe will step up. You just do your bit and then assign the rest to the universe and it'll get looked after. And, you know, we don't have to be super beings. We don't have to do it all. You know, yeah. There's so much magic in the universe to do it for us and help us. Just ask.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. And I think the power of is knowing that we are able to receive, because when we receive, we have more to give. And there is that energy and flow. And, you know, much of the time we are thought, you know, from our old programs is that we have to do everything on our own. Right. But we don't, because there are people that want to give to us that we get to honor their gift. So if I'm looking for clarity, I could try figuring it out for myself. But if I can actually work with you instead, not only do I get clarity from a different, more fresh perspective, I'm also able to honor the gift that you have to offer. And so there is such an energy flow of receiving and giving that I think is really powerful for us, especially now. And one thing I want to touch on before we close is I follow Lee Harris. I don't know if you follow Lee Harris, but he mentioned something on one of his, like his May update. And he said exactly what you had said earlier in our conversation is there's so much happening in this world. Sometimes it can get daunting. Sometimes we can say, like, for me, I'm like, how do I rescue all of the dogs all over the world? I can get very overwhelmed. But it's one at a time. It's one puppy. It's one bag of dog food, you know. And so one of the things that Lee says that you had actually said as well is pay attention to your address. Pay attention to your home. Mm-hmm. That is where we can create the impact. And you mentioned that so eloquently earlier. And I think that's something I would love to close out as well, mm-hmm. is that when we get overwhelmed with what's going on in the world and all of the darkness that could be happening, you know, that could make us feel sad and overwhelmed and almost defeated, is that what can we do right now at home with our loved ones and also with our self-love? And how could we just turn that into our own self? That's going to be the impact that we need to be able to shed our light on others. So
absolutely. Just live in gratitude and love and know you're making a difference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I was having a really crappy day or, you know, very doubtful, I would drive up to Williamstown and, you know, it was half an hour drive from here and just chat with her, like, you know, mm-hmm. should I continue? I need a pep talk. And she would share her highs and lows with me. And I would leave, you know, with the tunes cranked again, feeling empowered and, you know, okay, I got this. Mm-hmm. And so it's people like that. And I have a few of them that wow. have been such like an inspiration to me and honestly helped me to continue, you know, moving forward and pushing hard forward. And so, yeah, just she's one of so many. I wow. read a book by Derek Sivers. I can't remember that. The author is Derek Sivers, Sivers. I can't remember mm-hmm. the name of this little book that I read, but it was mm-hmm. so inspirational. And at that time I was quite naive, just starting off Ground Soap, and I sent him an email.
Good for you.
And my husband was like, why did you do that? And I was like, well, you know, he said at the end of his book, if you have any questions, you know, this is my email. And I have questions. And so what, like, well, I need to ask these questions. And he wrote back, he gave me so much constructive advice. And, you know, 10 years later, he said, if you have a lemongrass bar, you know, I'd love to buy one. I didn't have a lemongrass bar, but just 5 years ago, we came out with Frankly Lemongrass. And my husband said, you should send one to Derek Sivers. I totally forgot yeah. about it.
Wow.
He took that little book and passed it on to his bandmates while they were on tour. And every single one of those band members read that book, and it inspired a couple of them. And I have no idea where that book is. I wrote a few quotes of my own in that book, and I can't even remember them. I wanted that book back so I could, you know, read back on, but yeah, I don't know where that is, but I'm sure it's created a lot of, you know, great energy support. Yeah, yeah. For the people that have read it. So
I'm going to definitely look up that book. That's amazing. Yeah. And it's so beautiful that you shared that story, because one thing that a quote that comes into my mind was almost 20 years ago when I was just starting to be an entrepreneur. And one of my mentors at the time had said, don't procrastinate a prompting.
Well, a huge part of it was my customers, like, or my potential customers, the people that were trying the soap and the feedback that I was getting. And I thought, okay, wow, I did create something awesome and it is working. Like, all, right. And I worked on those recipes for over a year before I launched anything. And like I said earlier, and so that feedback proved to me that there was something behind this, and it validated my gut, you know, my intuition, just how I was feeling. Like, oh, you can do this for yourself. You can, you know, respect yourself enough to make these changes for you. And I gave my grandmother, my Oma, she loved monarch butterflies. And I gave her this monarch butterfly from an Oprah magazine. Remember when we used to create vision boards?
I still do. Yes. Amazing.
I love this board. So, you know, I had all these Oprah magazines and sorry, Oprah, but I would cut them up and because they had shits. Beautiful pictures, and I would make these vision boards. And I found this beautiful monarch butterfly, and I found also a quote from one of her magazines, and it was from the quote is, "Make visible what without you might perhaps have never been seen." And so I cut that quote, and I pasted it underneath this monarch butterfly, and I gave it to her, and she framed it and she put it by her front door. And I have that. I took it back, but I read that often. And it's in my room where I, you know, get ready in the morning and I see it. I see it a couple of times a week and it reminds me where I was at that time, you know, my mindset and how I had to push through. And gosh, I lost my train of thought. And so I just, you know, those inspirational those moments, I really hung on to those to help me push through those difficult times. And the customers are the ones that really kept me motivated. My family, of course, and my friends. Yeah. And I just loved what I was doing. I loved picking out the fabric. I loved, you know, smelling the smells when I was making it. I was just happy. And so I wanted to, you know, continue in that direction. And I knew what I had to do. And like I said, I was pretty naive. And so I think feeling like that is really helpful because your ego is in check, you know, and I'm really familiar with my ego. I'm really, you know, I can talk to it. I can tell it to shut the hell up, you know, like stop filling my head with that stuff that I don't need to hear. And, you know, I'm pretty in tune with my, I'm pretty in tune, say.
Right.
So I love that. just listen to my gut, and the yeses were encouraging, the noes were motivating. I didn't even have a GPS, and I was doing sales in Toronto. My husband would say, okay, when you get to the east end of Toronto, you know, the beaches.
That's where I found your ground soap in the beaches.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
I don't mean to cut you off, but yeah, so keep going. And I'll share my story after you share.
I know what story you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they were amazing family. That store doesn't exist anymore, but they were really awesome and also inspirational. So these store owners, they were encouraging, they loved the soap, you know, they would run out. I would get like, it was just, it, people were loving it and it was word of mouth. And so it was, no pun intended, growing very organically. And I think I struggle with it daily kind of too. You know, I'm always thinking about
that next big project or milestone.
And
Yeah.
You know, how that's going to the money and how that's going to help and how I'll be able to, you know, grow ground soap even more. And so when I think about money now, I think about how it can facilitate things within, within the business, but it's still hard for me to keep it because when you grow up without a lot of it, for me, I felt like I needed to prove to people with exterior, you know, with clothing or vehicles or all of those materialistic things, mm-hmm. that becomes kind of a protective shield. And so mm-hmm. that hides, you know, your family's, you know, instability and I think so many of us grow up that way where you don't want people to know. And that's so crazy because the majority of us live like that. You know, it is a struggle, especially now. I mean, a lot of people, I think, that were financially stable are also getting a bit of a wake up call. And, they understand how it feels a little bit more. And so they can relate. And so I like to be honest about those things. You know, people think, mm-hmm. oh, you're selling your soap in France, you must be doing so well, and you're in all of these stores. And I remember my a friend of mine, we were at a round table of entrepreneurs. Me, I was just starting off, and some of them were multimillionaires. And I remember after the meeting talking to this guy in the parking lot, I said, I can't wait to get to where you're at, you know? And he said, you know what, Angela, it's all relative. You know, if you're making $1 million, your costs are going to be like this. And that was really helpful information because I thought, yeah, you're right. And now I totally get it. It really is all about the cash flow. It facilitates things. And so I think, you know, just really talking to people, asking questions, you know, mm-hmm. maintaining an open mind and open to constructive criticism, not taking things personally, just really focused. I think that really helps with not making the finances your primary objective.
As you know, my whole purpose is to bring the people together, and I really love people. As you know, I really mm-hmm. love people. Although I'm a Buddhist monk, I'm not here to promote any particular religion or belief or cultural values. I have embraced all sentient beings as human beings, and all I know that. Everybody, it doesn't matter who they are, what religion or culture or political background they belong to, every human being desires happiness, and everybody wants to be happy. All sentient beings want to be happy. So my mission is to add more happiness and joy through a global principle I have developed is called a kindfulness. My global mission is to call every country a mindful and kind nation. So starting mm-hmm. from Canada, officially I call Canada a mindful and kind nation. So and I know, Diane, you are living in Mexico now.
Yes.
And so one day we could call Mexico a mindful and kind nation program.
I'm ready.
Yeah. So this is my mission, you know. So everywhere I go, every country I go, I do a session under the theme a mindful and kind nation. Mm-hmm. So today, what we can do. It just maybe, you know, have this friendly conversation. I know there are a lot of people in the world who who are searching some kind of ways of improving their life. And so there are people who are remaining maybe suffering silently, you know, and those who have the courage, they come to us in person. But there are a lot of people who are seeking some help outside, maybe through this kindful and joyful conversation between you and me, Diane. You know, I'm pretty sure at least some people are going to benefit. Some people are going to find light and hope through this conversation.
How compassion, mindfulness, prayer, and meditation have helped those that you have privately helped. And I have been at Celebration Square in Mississauga, so we're also talking thousands of people in meditation through your beautiful leadership. Can you touch on that and what that has looked like for those that found the light through your work, Bonte?
Yeah, well, Dan, that's a good question. I normally brag of myself. I don't advertise myself. It's just I just keep doing things for the people, and people get to know me and whatever I do daily, weekly through the word of mouth. So I started doing the student counseling first at UFT, University of Toronto. Mm-hmm. And I knew students made appointments with me, and they were talking about a lot of issues, maybe what they were going through. And so what I did by then, even now, I think my biggest therapy is being there for them. Listening to their story without judging them, and embracing them with kindness. And once I listen to their story, then I think I know what they're going through. I think I know what they're looking for. So I kind of share some ancient wisdom, maybe tell them some story, tell them some words of, I would say, wisdom or light, to see the light in their life, because they're in a state of darkness and they're looking for a way to get out of that darkness and to see the light. And find hope, you know. Mm-hmm. And so my task as the urban Buddhist monk, I mean, I wouldn't label myself as the therapist or psychologist or mm-hmm. psychotherapist or counselor. I mean, people could call me anything, but I call myself as the urban Buddhist monk. Mm-hmm. I think I'm fully aware of the urban setting issues, the problems, and so I just open the door for them, you know. Right. I say door to my center is open for you. You can if you're seeking the light, you can come and find the light. So my job is to show them the way how to find the light and hope. And it was our chief monk who opened the door for him. He got scared too. And then I was doing some work in my room. He said, there's a young man looking for you, but his condition is like this and it's terrible. So I stopped all my work. I went to the front door and to receive him. And then I saw him, you know, in that bad shape, and he was shivering. I said, okay, don't worry, come in. Let's go to the meditation hall and let's sit down and talk. So, you know, we sat down. I I said, don't worry, everything will be fine. Just take some deep breaths and relax. Let's talk. And I think having a friendly conversation is very important. And so he told me this story. And at the end of it, he was kind of relaxed and I knew what he was looking for. Then I gave him some hope, you know, through the stories, through the words. And he was kind of relieved and relaxed at that moment. And in addition to that, you know, I think professional therapy, psychotherapists, psychologists, or counselors wouldn't do this. But I'm a Buddhist monk, so I want to show my kindness in action. So I said, "Would you like to have a cup of tea with me?" He said, "Yes." And so I, you know, our famous kitchen.
So I was going to say, your tea is not your average tea.
So
I've had it many times.
I took him to the kitchen, and I made a nice cup of tea for him, and also gave him what we had, some cookies and some sweets, and then after the tea, actually, he was very much relieved. And so I encouraged him to continue coming to the my weekly meditation sessions or Dharma talks. And in addition to that, I said, he asked me whether he could see me at least 2 weeks, 2 times a week. I said, mm-hmm. No problem, because I knew he wanted some help. So I gave him some extra time. And so we had nice conversations, and he kept coming to my Dharma talks and meditation sessions. Though it was very difficult for him at the beginning to spend 1.5 hours with the group, then he saw the other people, how they were into meditation, how they were mindful and listening to the talk I gave. And then he was, I think, looking around. Maybe he thought there are other people who also going through the same like me, but they also had to find help from Bhante, because he knows me now.
Yeah.
So, and then he kept coming, and then he recovered from maybe that was a deep depression he was mm-hmm. in that dark darkness. Mm-hmm. So and then he continued coming to my Wednesday session.
I would love for you, any words of wisdom that you can to support those that maybe have lost their belief, and it doesn't have to be trying to make a massive change, but starting at home and starting with what can we do on a daily basis to remind ourselves that we are the love that we can then radiate outside of us, and we can actually change the world no matter what it looks like on the outside. Yeah. So I would love for you to touch on that. I think it's really valuable.
Yeah, thank you, Dan, for that question. And actually, you have to always be mindful for a fact that, as I always tell the people, you are bigger than the mountain. Mm. You have to believe in yourself. You have to have faith in yourself. You're a good person. It's like, how sometimes I think the modern society is so unkind. Like, if a person does one wrong thing, and how they try to make you like you're a piece of, I don't want to use that word,
Yeah.
You're not good at all. And
right.
they push you into the garbage, So, but my principle is, my understanding, a person could be bad, let's say 99%. But the same person, though he or she is 99% bad, that person has 1% goodness.
Wow.
I would love to dive in, but for the audience, those that are watching or if they're listening, depending on the platform, because of, even for myself, I was not familiar with human design. I had kind of heard of it for a couple of years, actually, but until I actually looked into what it is, I was very unfamiliar. For those that are unfamiliar, what is human design? Can you explain to us holistically, what is it exactly? And what is it different than other potential modalities that people may be familiar with?
Great question. Yeah, sure. It might be helpful just for me to talk a bit about, I guess, my journey coming to finding human design myself and why I was so excited when I found it. And so I've spent many years in the corporate space working as a human resource professional. And in my time that I worked there, I worked with what we call psychometric testing tools, right? So, you know, I've been accredited and I've used, you know, things like Myers-Briggs type indicator, which is some of the tools that are more widely known. And I mean, I love them because it started to help people understand more about who they were. So that's really something that I've been quite passionate about. And so I've really have done a deep dive into a number of these different tools. Anyway, I also probably 10, 15 years ago, really started to understand how important energy was. Right. And yes, I now work as an energy healer. But, you know, back then I started to realize that there was this incredible dynamic going on that nobody talked about. And that was this whole energetic dynamic between people. And in my corporate, you know, jobs, I spent months, years teaching people about communication skills and how to improve relationships and things like that, particularly in a workplace setting. And particularly as a coach, you know, you certainly delve into that, you know, to great extent. And so I started to realize that a lot of these tools that we were working with were what I call two-dimensional, right? So, yes, everything's helpful. Don't get me wrong. Very, very helpful. But when I started to understand this whole energetic dynamic that nobody talked about, but everybody knew, I would say to people, how do you feel when you're with someone and you feel that your energy is being drained? And they said, oh, yes, I know people like that in my life. So people know that this is going on, but no one teaches you about this unless you go looking, I guess. Anyway, so I left the corporate world because my time was done there, and I started to, you know, then learn a number of different healing modalities. And along that journey, someone showed me human design. And they said to me, and it was just over coffee, and that's how these things happen, don't they? You know, they're just impromptu conversations. And this person said to me, you know, this tool that just combines everything. So I just had to go and have a look at it, and I fell in love with it. Why? Because it tells you about energy and how you show up energetically and how you impact others energetically. So that was one of the key things that really engaged me about it. The other thing was that it doesn't compare you to anyone else's model of what we should be like, right? It really gives you deep information about who you are at an authentic level. It's an unusual tool in the sense that it's a channeled foundation of information. It was channeled by a Canadian man, as it turns out, back in 1987. And it took him 5 years to bring it forward into a format that people could then work with it. And all you need is your date of birth, time of birth, and location of birth. For people to understand who they are at the core level is what human design does. And the challenges that we've got at the present moment is that the systems, particularly the social systems, the education systems that we have lived in or with, they are more around people, you know, being something that they are not. We get lost in these systems due to the, I guess, the pressure to be a particular way, or behave a particular way, or show up in a particular way. And sometimes it's really hard to know who we are at a core level. And human design will help people understand who they are. And there's no comparing you, as I said, to someone else's model about, you know, how we should be. And I think that's incredibly important.
I love that.
Yes, indeed. Human design is a synthesis of what I call four major bodies of wisdom. The main one is astrology. So there's a definite, you know, link, and there's a huge amount of astrological information that is in your human design. It also is the Chinese I Ching, the Judaic Kabbalah, and the tree of life with regard to that. And the chakra system. So when you see the body graph, so once I receive information about someone's date of birth, their place of birth and time of birth, I run a chart. And it's actually easy for anybody to run a chart. There's so many, available on the web. You just pump in that information and it'll generate a chart. The key is understanding what the chart means, I guess. So it's once you see the chart, you could see just immediately in it, the alignment between these other systems I referred to. But it's a synthesis of them. It also involves quantum physics, and it's really where I say spirituality meets science. And so when we put that information into the various programs that we do in order to, it generates what we call a body graph. And the body graph provides all this information about these codes that we hold within our body. It's the codes of our DNA. Mm-hmm. And so the key to understanding human design is being able to read the chart and then can see and then decode what it means. It's archetypal. So essentially, I mean, the philosophy I have about human design is that we had an agreement before we came into this lifetime, right, that we wanted to achieve certain things, we wanted to grow as a soul, we had a purpose in terms of how we contribute to humanity's evolution. And when you start to understand the body graph and what's there in the human design chart, we're essentially decoding all of that information. It's an energetic blueprint. And so we're holding these codes. And the beauty of it is that it's up to us in terms of what we choose to do with it. You know, nobody's putting us in a box or put you in a box and says you're this or you're that. It's really up to you in terms of how you work with that information in order to step into the best version that you can be in this lifetime. There are five key what we call energy types within human design. So when I do a reading for someone, I assume they don't know anything about human design. So I really do go through how the body graph comes into existence, and that so that when they're looking at their body graph, they get an understanding. They have a context, I guess, is what I'm doing with regard to that. Excuse me. And then I go through the entire body graph and talk about the various gates and channels and centers that are defined in the body graph. And that's where I really start to decode the archetypal themes that each individual is carrying. And that's where you really start to get an understanding of, oh my gosh, you know, this is so accurate. You are describing exactly who I am. And as you said, sometimes and often we're certainly not the same as everybody else, but there are certain aspects about how we prefer to operate that is sometimes different from the norm. Like, for example, I've a client that comes to mind. He's a lovely man. He is incredibly disorganized, right? Now, he has struggled in his entire life with this issue of being disorganized. That's how we in the third dimension would see him, right? However, he has a number one gate in his design is the gate of extremes, which means that he has to follow all of the natural rhythms of who he is, right? Which shows up like he's being incredibly disorganized. And so it really validated who he was and really said, hey, you've really got to honor this and to really live, for you to really step into the best version of yourself, you need to honor these rhythms that are not necessarily the same every day. And so it really made a huge difference to him to understand that about him. And so, it's really, as I said, going through and understanding the various gates that are defined, the channels that are defined in your chart and the centers, and understanding what that means for the individual in terms of how that shows up in day-to-day life. Then, as I said, I concentrate on the type, the profile, and the incarnation cross. And so the type, there are five energy types in human design. And as you described, you're a manifester. There's only 9% of the population are manifestors. Mm-hmm. Then you have this large group of generators, the pure generator, about 35% of the population, and then manifesting generators, who are a combination of the generators and the manifestors. And so just in this alone, having 70% of the population with generator ability, it means they've got this unlimited energy. Right. And so we live in a world that expects us to just keep going and going and going to have this energy. But it's only 70% of the population actually has that. Right. Wow. And so what the generators can do is share their energy with some of the other types that don't have unlimited energy, like the manifestor and also the fourth type, which is the projector. Mm-hmm. They have quite a challenging time because they don't have unlimited access to energy. And so trying to keep up with the generator types is very challenging for them. The fifth type is a reflector, is only 1% of the population. So they're quite rare. And, they have very open human designs, which means that they take in energy from others and they can be extremely sensitive with that as well. So that each of the types are very different and they operate very differently. And as you said, the manifestor is the visionary. They can just go out there and do it and make things happen because they are designed to initiate and to manifest, which is really exciting. The generator groups are here to build the form. So the manifestors really need the generators in order to bring things to fruition and to create things in the material world. The projectors are here to direct others. They're like the orchestra conductor, right? Is how I describe their type to them. And they're the ones, about 20% of the population, as I said, are projectors. And they're the ones that probably have the greatest aha and relief when I explain who they are, because they really have found it difficult trying to keep up with everybody else and really feel that there's something wrong with themselves, with them, because they can't keep up energetically with large part of the population. So it's really a profound thing to understand for a projector. Is to say that I think it's really clear to most people now that we're in quite extraordinary times, right? You can listen to the astrologers and they will tell you that we are in, cosmic alignments that haven't happened for, you know, in some cases, thousands of years. So we really are in extraordinary times. And so this decade, I feel in particular, is incredibly pivotal for the evolution of humanity. And I really do believe that we have all come here, a large number of us have come here to experience this and to contribute to what is currently playing out. It's epic, I would say, you know, with regard to that. And I think that human design plays a critical part in that because, you know, we have been incredibly conditioned compromised, I feel, in terms of our ability to express ourselves and to be the unique beings that we are. And it's been so incredibly confusing. And so what I'm finding, and I started to see this before I left the corporate world, is people are searching. As you explained yourself, you were searching. So many people are searching, and they will show up and say to me, you know, I'm here. I don't know why I'm here, but I'm here. I just feel that I need to be here, which I love because they have followed the energy. And I must just touch on that too, but I'll continue with the story and then I'll go back to it. And so human design, someone has actually described it. It's a tool for our times. And it is because it actually helps people understand authentically who they are, and it absolutely gives them more courage to step into it. And if I was to say that there was anything common about what people do say to me about my reading with them is they say, because I'm not sure that I always give them information that they're not actually aware of. I think the way I present it is probably new. I frame it in a completely different way through the lens of human design. But what they say is, oh my gosh, you have just validated who I am.
I do believe when we follow energy, we follow the light, there are things that can happen that are beyond what we can imagine, because especially when we're here to be making an impact and be of service. So yeah, and there's a lot I learned. Trust me, I had never run a business. I had no idea about paying taxes the first year. It was quite a mess.
Yeah.
But so I'm saying that because it wasn't like I was handed a stash of, you know, of bills and just said, okay, do what you want. Now that's great if you have that. And that's an awesome thing to have, but that wasn't my story.
Yeah. One thing that's wild. And one thing that spoke to me through many things that you shared was you said, but that's how I set myself up. When you were talking about the other version of financial independence or dependence. So important when you called yourself out on that, not like you had to call yourself out, but you just like, case in point and matter-of-factly said, and I set myself up for that.
Like ideas would change but I will say what's never changed is like there's this light or this burning in my soul, in my heart, that's like, I've got to do this. It's not even a option. It feels like I am being propelled by something else, like a fiery lit up desire. It's a burning desire. So I would say when you feel a burning desire, that becomes the way shower, that becomes the candle, that becomes the flashlight, that becomes the North Star. And it hasn't always been easy. I mean, I've been doing this now in my own business 10 years, coaching 15, but I can tell you it's not always been easy. Yet I have never not felt that. And the day I don't feel that, if I stop feeling that, I would do something else. But this still feels so on fire for me. It's even more so now, I think, especially as there's so much happening in our world. Mm-hmm. And that's something for all of us to pay attention to. Pay attention to your energy. Where do you have energy? Where do you not have energy? If I don't have energy in something, I'm learning to just drop it and let it go. It's not for me to do anymore. When we say yes to really being used for the highest good, not just our highest good, the highest good. Mm-hmm. That's where the divine can play with us. That's where we can meet new soul friends or soul family. And I, you know, with you right away, I was like, soul family, who is this? Like, who is this angel? And that is exactly the point for each of us when we are tapping into our guidance, when we're following that energy, when we're being courageous and saying, I don't know how, but I don't need to know how. I'm going to follow good orderly direction. Another word for God, right? Good.
Ooh, I've never heard that before at all. That's good, brilliant.
Orderly direction. Yeah. Wow. When we follow that, right? So that's the beauty. And when we look back, it's like flipping over the tapestry and oh my gosh, like those knots and that weird thread I put in there. Now it's like, no, we needed that. That was needed. And I just think of it this way. I can't see, you know, our eyes are facing forward. We don't have eyes all over our head, but there is a higher guidance that does. And so, you know, I think going into the way that I work or teach and why it's so important, and I know anyone listening, we're in the same vibration because it's how it works, right? Yeah. Our like attracts like. And yeah. I knew that with you. I remember you know, one of the things that has developed over the years, we all have this treasure box in us. I really believe we all have psychic intuitive abilities. No question. I mean, it's like batteries included, but many of us don't get a manual and we don't know how to use it. And what I have found over the years in both being clinically trained as a coach, but also doing a lot of inner work and leaning on my intuition and tapping into this greater spirit realm of higher consciousness, is that a lot of these abilities have developed. And so I remember with you right away, I saw it. I was like, oh yeah. I mean, it's like trippy. It's kind of what we're doing now and beyond, honestly. And people that, you know, are going to be listening and meant to work with you so you can serve at the highest good. This is that's where we all pass it on when we're being, you know, you're being your USQ, you're being your authentic connected higher self. So for me, I had a coach that changed my life 15 years ago. He asked me a question that literally, I'm talking like it changed my life. I didn't know whether to stay married or not. I had two very, very young kids. This was not like an opportune time. My family is a little more open, but you know, the person I was married to is in a family where it's like, you do not get divorced. I'm sure others listening from certain faiths and experience might have had that same family dynamic. And I knew in my heart, great person, but things were shifting and I had to honor myself. And this coach said to me, Julie, if you knew your life would be fantastic either way, what would you do? It was the first time I'd ever heard it said that way, where it was like, oh, life could be great either way. Are you kidding? I thought I was like doomed either way. I mean, I really thought my life was over. We shift the minute we ask a new question. It's actually similar to what we see in quantum physics. I won't even try to explain it, but you observing what's happening changes what's happening. So a new question changes your mind, changes your brain chemistry, changes the solutions. So he said that, and right away my body said, I don't want to stay in this marriage. I just knew. And I decided that day, I'm going to make a new vow. I'm going to get married and to myself. I'm going to make a vow with myself that from here on out, I'm going to honor myself and honor my truth. And not perfectly, but I'm going to do that. I actually have a ring I got. That's a whole other thing. Another story for another day. But I was like, I'm going to marry myself. That is really, truly what is needed here. And I need to honor and realize that things could be okay. And I'm doing something that would be very upsetting, but that also felt true. It can be both. Mm. And then I coached this program. And then I went back to school and I got trained. And I just found there's so many different modalities. There's so much about this kind of coaching that really was making change. And then I started to see the power of intuition when you add it. And I wasn't trained in intuition. This is something that's developed. And it took, it honestly took something, because I have a certification program. I've certified over 100 coaches. I teach at Georgetown. And I realized it's an and, you know, for me, bringing in all of the senses that are beyond the five senses, our energy, our chakras. So I really, the gift for me is I do see sense and feel people's higher self, especially once you're in my energy field, like once we have a conversation. And that's what happened with you. That's what I love to do. And I believe there are others of us who can do that. And I think those that really are called to this work of healers, coaches, we were able to envision, we're able to see, hold space for your dream, your heart, your higher self. And that's what happened. I saw this with you and more, which is just beginning. And I'm, you know, seeing it with myself and being patient, right? It happens in divine timing. So I just, to me, supporting the expansion into one's higher self is where I am lit up. I think it mirrors nature.
So when I was in the Navy and served in aviation, one of my tours was in Central and South America as part of the region we covered. And my career actually finished full circle because I started off there in aviation and I finished off in South America and Central America in public affairs in 2022. But when I was flying missions there, I always said one day I will be able to go into Colombia, because at the time the FARC was very active and U.S. service members couldn't, you know, be on the ground in a safe manner. So we, you know, it was just cautioned. I think it was a State Department advisory saying, hey, just be mindful of this, can't go in the country at the time. And I said, one day I'll go back there. So fast forward to 2022, I'm transitioning out of the Navy, and I had a lot of friends actually in Naples, Florida, and other areas in Florida share about Dr. Joe Dispenza and working with veterans and brain and heart coherence. And it really, you know, intrigued me and fascinated me. And I had also been introduced to him a few years back. But it was through one of my therapists for a knee injury that I had sustained. And we were doing some physical therapy and she kept playing Dr. Joe. And this was like 2021. And I said, you know, I need to probably go to one of his events. Everyone always says it. Now I kind of have the spaciousness to do that. Let's try it out. So I went to his progressive retreat in Panama. And what was really cool, and that was in 2022, and going there, it was ironically the same grounds at which I used to fly missions out of. And it was transformed, because when the canal turned over, it was transformed into and given to the Panamanians. So these places that I remember were now other things. And the convention center where we had it was a magical weekend. And I just zipped around Panama City because I know it pretty much like the back of my hand.
Wow.
And so as you know, we came in and one of the days he goes, hey, everyone, you know how he does. He goes, guess what? We're going to be back in, you know, Central and South America. And we're going to be in Cartagena. And I thought it was an immediate hell yes for me, Diane. I knew I'm like, I'm going to be there, because if I'm going to do my first advanced retreat and really dive into this neuroscience for optimal living, it's going to be Cartagena. So that is how it kind of unfolded. And, you know, and I said, you know, one day I'll be back. So I went back into Cartagena, arrived, I think it was January 2023, we were there. Yep. And it just felt great. It was like I had never left. Like when I landed at the airport, I remember there was a long line. And I think we stayed at a different hotel than you all. But being, you know, right on the water and experiencing the culture. And then ironically, too, emerald is my birthstone. So I've always been, you know, a aficionado of emeralds, and manifested the actual owner of all the emerald stores in the city center there. And he took me on a tour of the Emerald Museum and, you know, just all the beauty and what goes into finding the perfect emerald for you. Back to my family, Diane, and I had my grandparents, my dad served in the Air Force. So we had a long lineage of service members and patriots and serving our country. And I wanted to follow in those footsteps. I thought, you know, I want to defend our constitutional republic and defend our freedoms overseas and abroad so that we can have and enjoy the freedom here on the homeland. And so that's what kind of led me to the Naval Academy and moving into, you know, a beautiful space and being able to serve our country in that capacity. And I think it really started then. And then as a young athlete, I was an athlete my whole life. I was a swimmer. I was track and field. I did cross country, played golf, and did a lot of startup teams because as you know, women's sports wasn't a huge thing, like just like we're seeing in soccer and other things that have evolved over the years. And that really led me, that combination was like a great catalyst for everything I did in the rest of my life and the discipline and the focus and the rigor that's required in all areas of life and business, especially. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of correlations to that. And yeah, and it just kind of led, you know, one thing led to the other. And then I remember meeting my blue and gold officer. And this is actually, I share a lot of this in the chapter of the book I'm co-authored in called The Military Effect, yes. Which came out in May. And
congratulations.
Thank you so much. But we met and he just said, have you considered one of the service academies? And so I thought, you know, let's explore. So, you know, I went to all the service academies, got in, but it was really Annapolis that really resonated with just my my desires and where I saw myself. I had always watched military movies, and I thought one day I could do that too. And that's what led me into naval aviation in the beginning part of my career. And then I can remember too, when I was a midshipman and an ensign, our superintendent always shared, if you're not having fun anymore, then just, you know, go, you can leave, you know, like you can go into civilian life after your tour, your commitment's over. And I never really had that. It was always like one thing to the next. My career was very unconventional. It didn't follow a linear path at all. Mm-hmm. But I've always been unconventional, and that's kind of how I approach life, and the rest is history. Wow. I think, a lot of that, Diane, was my parents. I had amazing parents, and God bless them. They're in the eternal homeland right now, or they entered the eternal homeland. And it was always unconditional love. And I would say, Mom and Dad, you know, like the map behind me actually is my homeland of Slovakia and a bunch of the places I served in the beginning part of my career. Wow. And my uncle had it, my mom's brother, and he would put pins everywhere that we were and stationed. So you can't see it in detail, but it has all the pins of places I've served or led operations and missions. Also studied. I studied abroad in Italy and Spain.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And but what's really cool is they never said, you can't do this. Like I'd be like, Dad, I think I want to, you know, go to Copenhagen. And he's like, okay, great. You know, you've got your money saved and, you know, you're going to be on a flight this summer with some other colleagues that were going from a group in our community in Pittsburgh. And and just nothing was ever like pushed back. It was like, you know, if you want to do it, great. And, you know, some guidance in the sense of, you know, consider this or XYZ or maybe research, you know, how that might show up or interview people. So I did a lot of informational interviews. And I think early on, because there was one point I wanted to be a lawyer as well. And so I remember talking to my other uncle and he just shared, he goes, I don't think you're best. He's like, you could do it, but it won't bring the full embodied life that you have now and the experience because you're such a global adventurer. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a small child, my uncle coming back from various trips abroad. He was an artist, a fine artist in Italy, and he would share different places he went and photos. And then I would hear him speaking Italian on the phone to his friends back in Florence, Italy. Yeah. And he was also in Corsica. And it was just like, I just had a real sense of like, that's what I want to do. And I think that is really where growth happens. And it's my happy place is traveling and learning other cultures. And everyone has their happy place. Maybe it's going to the gym, or maybe it's, you know, sailing or a hobby. But that's sort of like travel is a hobby and also my happy place. Yeah. First off, knowing your own inner compass, your own moral compass, how you show up in the world, and not being influenced by outside sources, whether that's social media, other people. And I always believe your life isn't up for committee vote. So as a leader, especially executive leader, and some of the spaces I've served in corporations, organizations, nonprofits, and the military, at the end of the day, the buck stops right here with you, and it's taking ownership and accountability for yourself. But I think the more you are aligned in your brain, your heart, your gut, then you have agency. You actually can master your environment in that situation versus asking everyone else what they think. Because at the end of the day, when you read the facts, you know, you can make that informed decision. And that's some of the areas that I'm really passionate about too. And also have always been a seeker. So seeking out new ways to do things, innovation. I've always been an early adapter. And again, it's following that intuition and knowing, okay, this is how I'm going to do it. And having the supportive system too. I think that's huge. Like your network and who's around you to help midwife and be that scaffolding when you're birthing a desire so that you don't feel left out or alone in doing so, and keeping that coveted too, so that you can actually make it happen. And again, not asking everyone what they think. And I think part of that too is just staying, you know, you just have to put in the work and you've got to keep your nose down and do the work, and great things happen. Question, Diane. So I'm part of many organizations and nonprofits in an advisory role and kind of behind the scenes. But one of the ones I'm most passionate about is Behind Thin Lines, which focuses on alternative healing modalities and innovation therapies for first responders and veterans, those that are at the front lines. And, you know, a lot of these people fought for our freedom overseas and on the homeland. And we were always told overseas, okay, we're going to win the hearts and minds of, you know, the people of this population that we're going to be serving in. And I think more importantly, what's most paramount right now is healing the hearts and minds of those that have served. So with veterans, with first responders that see this on a daily basis. And so that's some of the work that we're doing in it's an emergent technology, really. And the more you can recover and heal, the better you'll be in business, sports, and life.
Right. And also the strength and confidence to say, do that, what you're doing is now taking the role that you were in the field and now moving it onto the stage and through your own healing, showing up so that you can actually then it's like a full circle. So can you share for those that may be curious, just as a high level overview of alternative healing modalities, like what are a couple, you know, I think also 30, 40 years ago, maybe they were available, but they weren't part of the mainstream. So like any technologies or a couple that you want to share on that maybe surprised you, because clearly you did your due diligence on that as well too, these amazing offerings and gifts of healing modalities that are available to those that are, you know, in that capacity.
Yeah, the three top of mind, definitely Dr. Joe Dispenza's work in neuroscience and the discoveries that you are the source, you can heal your body. I think for veterans and first responders that have a higher level perhaps of trauma, not necessarily out from the field, but it's the layer of the baseline you come into it. So childhood trauma, unresolved issues, and then you have all that, that's your baseline, right? And now you're out in the field or in diverse asymmetrical environments and performing. So you have this built up events that happen in your life and experience and trauma. and that you're expected to show up, you know, shiny and bright, you know, at the office. And that's where I think, like a stick of dynamite, that's the psychedelic experience. So working with psilocybin, like Beckley retreats and safe environments. And there's amazing programs that do that with Vet Solutions, Behind Thin Lines, Heroic Hearts. There's so many amazing things happening in that space of healing and the ecosystem. And And then the other one is Brain Tap with Dr. Porter, Patrick Porter. And that is similar to like Dr. Joe's, a headset that you wear. And actually there's various programs you can listen to, and it kind of just sets and resets you to allow to have that clear coherence and just feeling of joy. When you go within, that's when you really discover and uncover your mission within. So it's having those quiet moments, being able to reflect. And it's the preparation, it's the rehearsals, Diane, and everything. Because the more you rehearse, the better you are. And that's how you can show up in present moment and execute, whether it's chair flying a plane or rehearsing for a speech, getting comfortable up on stage. And I was fortunate, a very dear friend of mine, Dave Sanderson, who was the last passenger out on Miracle in the Hudson and really helped save a lot of lives, getting people out of the plane in that cold, frigid day in January 2009. He had asked me last fall, he said, "Suzanne, I know you're going through some really amazing training. Would love for you to be the opener keynote at our 15th anniversary." And without further ado, I said, "Yes. What's the venue, where will we be, who will be there, et cetera," and all the planning aspects with the event planner. And it was beautiful. It was my inaugural keynote for that event. And we talked about service and we talked about the first responders and just the humility and the synchronicity, Diane, of what could have been a much different outcome. Actually, it was one of the most amazing down in the history of aviation for a ditching effort, you know, of Captain Sullenberger landing the plane and the miraculous efforts that followed thereafter, and hence the movie made after it, too. It was amazing being there. And as a public affairs officer, I was always the one briefing everyone or prepping them. Yeah. The media. Now I'm in the center.
Yeah.
But I feel like my brothers and sisters in athletics and arms prepared me for that event, and being able to embody the experience and be real time with like 15 international media outlets being there and able to talk about service, and then being right where just yards away, literally from where that plane made its journey on the Hudson. Yeah. And we do talk about the 1 degree, and that kind of prompted another discovery from that event, because they always said if the plane had gone 1 degree east, 1 degree west or down, like much different outcome in considering that population with Manhattan, Jersey City, you know, it goes down in history as one of the most miraculous aviation events.
It's mind blowing. Hey friends, thank you again for following and tuning in to the Lucy Smiles Living Room podcast. It really does truly support my mission to help inspire you through our beautiful guests that I also want to thank who have come on to share their beautiful stories of transformation. If you want to connect with me privately, you can actually go right to my website, lucysmiles.com. Feel free to send to me a personal email. You can also catch my newsletter by subscribing, which also includes my weekly intuitive messages. If you're on social media, you can follow me with my handle, I am Lucy Smiles. And if this was inspiring to you and something helped support you on whatever the journey is that you are going through, please feel free to review, write a comment, and most importantly, if you can subscribe and share this episode and all our other episodes, that would be amazing. My dream and my mission is to truly help you to follow the magic that ignites your inner essence And so until next time, we will catch you soon. I hope to catch you on the next episode.